You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, here we are. 2007 is finally here, along with the new iPhone, ITV, and Vista, just to name a few. We could almost say welcome to the all-new Tech Talk Radio, but that would be misleading. We might sound a little different, but that's it. The regular team returns for another insightful year, where we take a look into the evolution of technology that shapes our lives today. If you're new to Tech Talk Radio, our show demystifies technology. From communications to computers, audio, television, and the good old internet, we'll help you get the most out of the technology in the palm of your hand. Our guests range from aviation enthusiasts to key personnel in large multinational companies such as Microsoft and government agencies such as the Australian Communications and Media Authority. It's quite a diverse show with the underlying theme of technology. Our panel members are all experts in their own fields, and we're even interactive. You can talk to us via our website and forum, or on the phone, or by email. We'll tell you how throughout the show. For our first show for 2007, we'd like to welcome our new listeners, hearing us for the very first time through 4KZ in Queensland, servicing Cairns to Ingham. You can also hear us on 94.1 3WBC, 1611 3XX and 98.1 Cairns FM, not to mention a few select stations in the United States like Stop and Go Radio in Illinois.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
A new study out this week details the habits of Australian gamers. We take a look at Microsoft's new operating system Vista, Mac's new iPhone and ITV. We'll also tell you about one of the best new music services on the internet and chat to its creator, Tim Westergren, in San Francisco. We catch up with all the goings-on in Silicon Valley with our correspondent in the heart of Palo Alto, Lydia Davis. And today we talk Google and search engines and why we should all blog. And we'll also find out how NextG is going and what the competition's up to since the day Seoul changed our lives. There's our website of the week, gadget of the week, and everybody's favourite, the Odd Spot. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show that is Tech Talk Radio. First up, though, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Optus to roll out 3G to 96% of Australia, ISPs will play ball on speeds, Korean spam queen has been nabbed, pirates quick to offer Vista, and Telstra takes Vista to the flicks. People living outside mainland capital cities will benefit from fresh competition in mobile phones, with Optus promising to spend up to $800 million extending its multimedia third-generation mobile network deep into regional Australia. The move, which will see the number two telco's 3G coverage stretch to 96% of the population, is a response to Telstra's nationwide NextG launch held last October. 3G technology offers customers a range of data services to their phones, including news, sport, weather, internet access, video clips, and video calling, as well as music downloads. Some of Australia's top internet providers say they will review their advertising practices after the competition regulator moved to stop them misleading consumers shopping around for broadband services. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission announced that it had given internet providers instructions for complying with trade practices laws when advertising broadband services. Head of Regulatory and Legal with Australia's third largest ISP, iiNet, Steve Dolby said the company would review its use of the terms up to 24 megabits per second when advertising its ADSL 2 Plus broadband products. South Australian ISP Internode also said that it would review its broadband advertising practices to ensure compliance with the ACCC's guidelines. A South Korean blamed for several trillion spam emails in recent years has been arrested. Police said the 21-year-old computer science major, identified only by his family name Park, was detained for hacking into hundreds of computer systems and collecting data illegally. Local media have dubbed Park the Spam Queen because of his annoying and ubiquitous Kim Ha-na spam messages in South Korea. Local police said Park and an accomplice would face up to 3 years in prison or $41,000 in fines if found guilty. The duo are suspected of having hacked into 318 servers belonging to government offices, financial institutions and businesses and illegally collecting personal data on 12,000 people through spam messages. As Microsoft kicked off the global launch of its long-awaited Windows Vista, the software giant's new operating system also hit the streets of China, in a pirated form. In an electronic market in the southern city of Shenzhen, scores of sellers were offering the brand new software for as little as 10 yuan, or $1.66, along with Microsoft Office, antivirus software, and others. The sellers said Vista was available several weeks before its launch, although they would not say how they got hold of the version. Described as the official version of the new generation operating system on its cover, the pirated copy offered an identification code at the back of the disc for downloading the software. And finally this week, Microsoft has kicked off the arrival of its Windows Vista operating system with an on-demand movie partnership with Telstra's Big Pond Movies. Highlighting the new features of Vista, Microsoft Australia Director of Windows Client, Jeff Putt, announced that access to Big Pond's internet movie service would be built into the new operating system's media centre. Movie downloads would not be metered for Big Pond customers, but subscribers to other internet providers would be required to pay for download traffic to use the service. Microsoft also announced a new partnership with Kodak. It will allow Vista users to order prints of digital photographs stored on their computers directly from Kodak via the Windows interface. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Vista and Office 2007 goes retail January 30. Ready to market. RTM, as they say in the trade.
Why on earth the Victorian Electoral Commission can't arrange to have electronic online voting for everybody in Victoria, I'll never know.
I must borrow your sim, actually. I want to do an RSS update on my...
The way that some of our students and young people are using the internet leaves it open to a lot of potential dangers, and I think that a lot of people don't think through their actions.
Can you just explain to us what a MySpace site is?
What MySpace is, it's what we call a social networking site. I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours? But it is their space to socialise.
I have seen links on some sites, like the photo sharing sites, where they do have a link actually built in, maybe to each page, and it says report abuse.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software, and you're done. Now every week, you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
The panel with Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan.
Very good evening. Oops, already Freudian slip. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the very first one for 2006. I neglected to say Mark Diggins is joining us too this evening. We've got a full contention of absolutely everybody. So welcome aboard if you haven't heard us for the first time, and a big cheerio to everyone listening to us on 4KZ. 150,000 people listening to us across the top end of Queensland, huge in Queensland. Dr. Ron, thank you very much for keeping everybody entertained across the course of the summer break, because it was a big, long summer break, wasn't it?
Yeah, very well.
Oh, dear. See, failure already? Let's try this button over here. See, I'm new to the panel again. I haven't done the panel for a while. I'll pull that one down and I'll push that one up.
That's better.
Thank
hello.
You. Hello there. Welcome. Welcome.
How are you?
I'm a little confused at the moment, but we're getting there.
A bit dazed and confused, like we all are. Yes, it's exciting to be back, and there's a bit of a buzz here, isn't there? The studio's been very lonely, I've got to say, with all you guys over the last few weeks, but It's been a lot of fun bashing the summer series together. Hope everyone's enjoyed that.
I have. It's been good. Some of the blasts from the past that we've had, I think it's been really terrific. All some of the good guests too.
We'll have some of those guests back this year in 2007. Hello to all our new 4KZ listeners. It's terrific to have you on board this week.
Yeah. I think it's good. We're expanding the horizons a little bit too. Anyway, we'll talk about our adventures over the summer breaks very shortly because I'm sure we've all had plenty. I went away on holidays. I've got an XG gripe, but nonetheless, we'll talk to the man about that later on. Mark Diggins is in. Hello, Mark. How was your break?
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Ron. How
Mark,
are you?
Mark, well. How are you?
Oh, yeah, I had a great break. Good to get away, doing something non-techie, get a, you know, down the beach and have a relax away from work particularly.
It's nothing like a good break from work, except we tend to take it with us these days with mobile phones and laptops. And
don't we, you know, like can't get away for a week without a laptop, and yeah. That's me, myself included.
You tried to, Andrew, but you didn't succeed.
No. Telstra made me have a good holiday. It was lovely. But hey, we'll come back to that. Graham Callaghan is another regular on the panel here for those listening to us for the first time, and Graham does lots of things with computers, apparently. Hello, Graham. How are you?
Hello, everybody. Hello, Andrew.
It's lovely to have you back in, and thank you for your help, too, over the summer break. You came up and did a few things.
I just pushed a few buttons.
With Dr. Ron.
Dr. Ron did most of the work.
It all helps.
Was good to hear some of the old interviews again, though. I really enjoyed listening to the show.
It was. Does anybody have a favourite interview from last year, just out of curiosity?
I think the interview with Susan McLean from Victoria Police was not only interesting, but very topical at the moment. There's been a lot in the news about online safety and especially cyberbullying, and we'll be getting Susan to come back in on the program later this year, for sure.
I must admit, I'd have to agree with you on that. I do think that the cyberbullying was very topical. And yeah, it was good. She was very well informed. And you probably heard a few grabs of her in the opener too, which was all good and fine. So, Mark, did you hear anything, or what's one of your favourite?
Yeah, I liked the interview with the man from CityLink. I can't remember his name. Just talking about the technology behind the
CityLink is a tollway technology in Sydney and Melbourne.
That's right. That was Tom Bucher. He joined us from CityLink Transurban.
Now, I wasn't here for that episode, so I've to hear it back again a second time, pick up on it was really good, and talks about how quick they've got to process those images and the tolling behind it and the fines and all that sort of thing. Was quite good.
Mm.
Yeah, the electronic and RF tolling was fascinating. The one I enjoyed hearing again was a slightly obscure one. I really enjoyed hearing about the light communication one again. That was a bit of fun for those of us of a technical mind.
That was Chris Long off the top of my head.
Just refresh our memories. It was about transmitting voice over a very long, long distance using
purely light.
Light,
yeah, by having a light that was changing intensity along with the signal and receiving that a long distance away using some fairly simple optics. It was fascinating the way they worked.
They do it with those light-emitting diodes, and they only put out like 4 watts, which is,
And $10 at your local.
That's right. But these are these same super bright LEDs that you're now seeing in the
those little suckers in the traffic lights.
In the traffic lights. Oh, those ultra bright red traffic lights.
There's a pet hate at 4 o'clock in the morning on the way home from the boozer, isn't it? Just wait. You dread it turning green, don't you? You have to put the sunnies on.
They embed themselves on the back of your retinas, don't they? You can't see anything for hours.
Yes, once again, if you're listening to us in strange places, all of our traffic control systems down here have gone solid state. Gone are the old filament light bulbs, and we've got these little LEDs that we were just talking about.
You see them
about,
on the backs of trucks everywhere as well now, too. So they're gunning a big
lights,
foothold.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Well, they last a lot longer, too. Now, here's something that I did over the holidays, which, while we're talking about LEDs, you know the little 12-volt lights that we have in the room, our down lights? And normally every house has
400 or 500 of them.
I'm just thinking of our kitchen and main area. I'd say the count would be at least a dozen.
We'd have a dozen in our house, I think, yeah.
Okay, I did a little bit of a sort of search on Google and came up with a site here in Australia. I should actually, we'll have it as website of the week 1 week, but it converted, it asked you a question, how many hours you used a light bulb for and the power consumption of that light bulb. So I said, I've got a 50-watt light bulb, which is what most of those little things are on the roof. And it said, okay, and how often do you have it on each week? And I said, about 20 hours a week. It came back and told me that it costs me $6.51 a year to run that.
Doesn't now, sound like much.
Multiply that by 12.
Ah.
Now we're getting to the point.
Yeah. Okay. Now I thought, wow, that's a lot. These things were supposed to be low voltage and save us all of our money.
But what can you do about that? Because you've got mounts in the ceiling that only accept those types of glows.
There are some new bright spark companies out there that are actually putting these LEDs that we just spoke of, like that are going into traffic lights on the back of trucks, that are actually going into direct replacement 12-volt downlights. You just pull out your old one and plug in the new one. Looks exactly the same, except it's
same
got a lot
fitting.
Of, yep, same fitting, same plugs. Mm-hmm. Don't have to do anything.
And it's got full of maybe, I don't know, 8, 10, 12, something
18
like that.
To 20 is what they can cram into a little bit of glass
light emitting
like that.
Diodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, they're pretty bright, but guess what the power consumption is? Less than 1 watt.
Really?
That's 50 watts down to 1 watt. Now, you plug that same number into the energy conversion, and it costs 12 cents a year to run. Now, that's $6.51 to 12 cents. Multiply that by 12 lights in the room. We're sort of starting to make a bit of a carbon emission sense here, I think, in our environmentally friendly or unfriendly world.
If you can put
do they last a lot longer than the filament ones?
Well, let me just put it this way. In my whole career of electronics, which has spanned the course of many decades, I don't think I've ever had to replace a light-emitting diode based on failure. We're all in the same boat.
Other than the ones I blew up.
That's right. I've blown up a few.
You don't put them in the wrong way.
Turn the voltage up too high on some of them.
Don't put them in
never
the
had them in normal use ever blow up. So
anyway, that was my ecological discovery across the course of the break that we've just had.
If you can put up with blue light too. Like, I know they're white, but they have a very blue tinge to them.
It's a bit like a fluorescent. Their colour temperature is not incandescent, which is orange.
Yeah, the incandescent is sort of that yellowy colour sort of thing. These are more blue. So if
I think you adapt to that fairly quickly, don't you?
You do.
Dr. Ron, tell us about the coffee mugs. We've all got Tech Talk Radio coffee mugs. There's been some blatant solicitation on the website.
Has there? I hadn't noticed. Oh, yes. Hello to the British Prime Minister as well, who's...
Tony Blair, yes.
Featured on our website, drinking from an exclusive Tech Talk Radio coffee mug. And if you'd like one, just ping us an email. You can send it to onair@techtalkradio.com.au or to myself, drron@techtalkradio.com.au. Let us know where to send it and how many you'd like, and I'll give you a short, quick quotation, which will go towards paying for the coffee mugs and pretty much nothing else. But no, they do look pretty swish. You don't want to be the last person in your IT installation to have one. So
they're definitely the thing to have, aren't they?
They are.
Got to have one on your desk.
And they're dishwasher friendly too.
They are dishwasher safe. Mark's got one in front of him right now.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Ron. I got presented with it tonight since I missed the last episode of last year.
He's holding it up to the microphone for everybody to see, but if you can't see that one, then have a look at the website.
Have a look on the website. Now, there's probably a lot of people listening to us and going, what on earth are they rabbiting on about? You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We've already talked a little bit of techie things this evening. We've also got on today's show some all sorts of other interesting things. Vista was released, which we'll talk about in a sec.
Was it?
Yep, and that's what most people said.
When was Vista released?
Yeah, the 31st of last month, in January. Pandora is an interesting music thing, music website.
I'm excited about
things
Pandora.
Things being the word, I will talk about things later. I did do an interview with the co-conspirator, the person who thought of Pandora, Tim Westergren. When did I speak to him? Last week, he was in San Francisco. So I had a chat to him about all that. Now, if you like me and you frustrated with listening to music on FM radio, or anywhere for that matter, it could be AM radio, have a listen. We'll tell you all about a really good thing for radio and digital music.
It's a website, but it's more of it's a service, isn't it, really?
That's right. Mm. Lydia Davis is our presenter in Palo Alto. She's a correspondent going to Harvard now, too. She's progressed.
Put
she's,
on your lid.
She went in there as an undergrad, and I think she's now, whatever it is, an overgrad. So she'll be joining us. We're going to talk all about websites and search engines and things like that. And she's a regular on the show. She comes in and tells us all sorts of good things from time to time. Mark, he works for one of the phone companies, and we're going to talk all the technology that's happened in the next G and 3G, 850, 2100, all that sort of stuff. So if you're interested in mobile telecommunications, that's also coming up. And a big thing tonight on the habits of Australian gamers. A lot of people out there that are gaming, well, they're turning into girls. Oh, I won't tell you more. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. And I'm not meaning that in a derogatory sense too.
Oh.
I'm talking about in a physical sense. Yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. If you'd like...
sounds worse than in a derogatory sense.
Yes, we have to listen back to that word. If you'd like to communicate with us, email is Dr. Ron, feedback@techtalkradio.com. And the other one is...
onair@techtalkradio.com.au.
Now, that's live all the time, but if you can hear us live on the stream, we do broadcast via internet streaming. You can listen to us there.
Or if you're listening to us live on 3WBC in Melbourne.
Yes, that's all good. Just shoot us an email and you can ask us questions while we're on air or even past the event. Alrighty, let's moving on. Ubuntu. What's Ubuntu? And you've had a bit of fun playing with Ubuntu. Now, that's Linux, isn't it? For those of people who aren't too familiar, and we're going over too. So
that's all right. Now, I've had lots of fun with Ubuntu. It is a Linux operating system, and it's designed for PCs, so it's an alternative operating system to Windows. So very quickly, I've had a good play with this over the Christmas break. I'm at the point now whereby I'm walking into my computer room, I'm turning on my desktop with Ubuntu, Windows XP just doesn't get a look in. Out of the box, it comes with OpenOffice, comes with mail clients, comes with web browser, it comes with instant messaging applications, and it's extremely usable. So we'll talk about that.
Now, there's a comment about this in the forum, isn't there? The Tech Talk Radio forum, where people can come and chat and exchange ideas?
Yeah, a lot of people are very keen and watching it with interest.
Very good. All right, well, I'm glad you've had a good Ubuntu experience.
That's going well. I'll keep you informed.
Now, just because you had a go at XP there, you're XP free, you have no intentions of Vista because, as you said, the 31st of January saw the release of Vista.
All five of them.
All five of them, yes. Yeah. And the Pirates obviously had them out a little bit earlier. But it's the biggest anticlimax, I think, since I don't know when. No one else here?
We talked about this last year, didn't we? Wasn't it John Howard to retire?
Oh, we had the poll. Which was going to happen first, Mark?
John Howard to retire.
Yep.
T3.
Yep.
Or Vista launch.
Yeah, so...
T3 won.
T3 did win.
It did.
And John Howard's running a distant last. Yeah. So what does that mean?
We do have a federal election coming up this year, don't we?
That's why we don't have our Prime Minister holding the coffee mug.
Oh, yeah, we'd have to change the graphic on the website. Although I don't think Tony Blair's long for the political life either.
All that work in Photoshop again.
Yeah.
Now, next week on the show, too, an early plug, we've got one of our regular Apple Mac gurus, Justin Dunlop. He's probably thinking, oh, am I regular, am I? Well, he's been in a couple of times now. Over the course of the break, we saw Steve Jobs get up there and sell his wares with ITV, which is, in a nutshell, a brand new method of connecting your home entertainment system to a TV with, I guess, the new iPhone in mind, because you can, and the new iPods in mind too, where you can download movies, heaven forbid, and watch them on an exceptionally small screen. Can't think that would have been a great viewing pleasure, I would have thought.
The ITV allows you to watch it on your full-size TV in your lounge room and your big sound system and all that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week when Justin comes in too. But what about the iPhone? What, instant reactions of iPhones, briefly?
Oh, well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I had a phone call from a Mac guru the next day when it was released, and he said, "Have you seen my new phone?" I said, "No." And anyway, 2.5G.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
No one in Australia wants to bring it online because it's obsolete
old technology before it's launched, yeah.
Well, you know that Cisco sued Apple the day after they announced the launch of the iPhone product.
Because Cisco, who make routers and other things for the connecting internet networks together, they own the name iPhone. They own it for another product that they were working on years ago.
Exactly,
yes.
Right. Now, you can actually name a product the same as an existing product if... where there's a trademark involved, as long as the uses aren't too similar. But
yeah,
these devices are so similar, and Cisco have already got an iPhone-type product, a telephone-type product. They've said that, no, Apple can't do that. And Apple have said, oh, yes, we can. And it's
Apple, we can do it.
We're going to take over the world. And it's gone to court.
Watch that'll be definitely one to watch, yeah.
Yes, I don't know who'll win. Whoever has the deepest pockets, I think, will win that one. Patents and things like that, because Steve Jobs did make mention in the product launch that it was well and truly patented, the technology. 160 pixels per inch. That's pretty high res on a little screen like that, too. Nothing else has been done.
Yeah, and a little telephone device.
Genre before. Yeah. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk all about Pandora. We're going to let Pandora's box loose, and we'll find out how it's going to work for you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Brett De Hoot is a listener, a debutee of Tech Talk Radio, and he's, across the course of summer, he sent me a link to a great website called Pandora, which I then forwarded on to you guys. Okay, now who have you actually opened your inbox now to look at it?
No, not me. I had a live demonstration from you.
You did indeed.
Oh, it was fantastic.
I've opened my inbox and my Pandora's box. It's very exciting
service.
What
did you think of it when you first saw it? Now, we're talking about a new audio streaming service for anyone to listen to. It's free.
Absolutely free. I can't believe that they're able to do that. But
yeah, out of the United States, it was been, 7 years in the making, and it gets streamed to your device, whether it be a, well, potentially a mobile phone, potentially, I don't know when they start, when you get Next G in your dashboard of your car instead of the AM, FM radio. Now, that's got to be exciting, don't you think? When's Next G coming out in a mobile, you know, Pioneer, Sony
know,
sort of stick it in your dash sort of thing?
Sort of radio over in the States, haven't they?
That's right. They've got digital radio receivers in cars. They'll be building it in so you can stream this sort of stuff straight to your radio.
Yeah.
Won't that be great?
But in essence, what it does is it streams really good quality audio to your computer or device, as I was saying before, and lets you choose the songs. But hey, let me just... we'll play this and we'll come back and talk about it after the track. The one thing in life that we all get some kind of enjoyment out of is music. But have you ever tried to find a radio station that matches your music taste? All we hear is radio caca,
radio goo-goo. Dance now. Let's do it.
Have you ever lost it about something, bro?
Chances are you've given up in disgust. And if you're like me, FM radio seldom gets a look in. But before you give up in despair, there is light at the end of the musical tunnel. On January 6, 2000, a group of musicians and music-loving technologists came together with the idea of creating the most comprehensive analysis of music ever.
You say, I only hear what I want to.
So what you say? Well, over the past 6 years, these guys, led by Tim Westergren, carefully listened to the songs of over 10,000 different artists, ranging from popular to obscure, and analysed the musical qualities of each song, one attribute at a time. This work continues each and every day as they endeavour to include all the great new stuff coming out of studios, clubs and garages around the world. Their efforts were to be known as the Music Genome Project. Tim Westergren, founder of Pandora.com.
In terms of why I started this, I'm a musician myself, so I spent many, many years after college playing in rock bands, traveling around the U.S., living out of a van, and, you know, living the rock and roll dream. But I got really interested in trying to figure out a way for independent or emerging artists to get heard. I also spent some time as a film composer. And, you know, the job of a film composer is actually to figure out the musical taste of a film director. And you do that by having sort of a conversation with them about songs they like. And so I kind of, as a composer, was beginning to apply something that in hindsight was something of a music genome. And the idea came to me that, gosh, if I could take this methodology I have for pegging someone's musical taste and sort of bottle it, it could be a really interesting tool to recommend music and help, you know, help those artists get discovered. So that's kind of what led to the Music Genome Project.
And how long's Pandora been online, and what's the reception been like in the music industry of all things?
Well, Pandora has been live for a little over a year, although we've been actually working on the Music Genome Project for over 7 years. And then the reaction of the record labels to Pandora has been really positive. You know, it's a system that helps people discover new music, and that's nothing but good news for record companies. It helps people buy stuff because they haven't heard it before, and it's really something that gets people back into music. So you know, the reception has been very positive.
So what would you say if I told you that you could listen to the music you wanted to hear anytime you liked? A radio station that played great songs that matched your taste in music almost every time? A radio station that played music just for you. A radio station that made you stop and listen to music again. And heaven forbid, a station that made you contemplate buying an album again. Pandora is the doorway to this vast trove of musical information. With Pandora, you can explore to your heart's content. Just drop the name of one of your favourite songs or artists into Pandora and let the Genome Project go. It'll quickly scan its entire world of analysed music, almost a century of popular recordings, new and old, well-known and completely obscure, to find songs with interesting musical similarities to your choice. Then sit back and enjoy as it creates a listening experience full of current and soon-to-be favourite songs for you.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Too good to be true? Well, thanks to the internet, this station is now a reality, and you can program it by visiting pandora.com. Pandora describes itself as a music discovery service designed to help you find and enjoy music that you love. And from personal experience, it does this very well. But that's just it. Music is a very personal thing.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes.
When you first visit Pandora.com, the first thing you'll see is a prompt asking you to enter one of your favourite artists or songs. Pandora then uses the musical information it has about that song to find similar sounding tracks by different artists. It takes your input and feedback, whether you like it or dislike it, and uses the Music Genome Project to create stations that play songs that are musically similar to what you've told it. And that's it. Only the music counts. Pandora doesn't care about how popular the artist is, who's backing them, and which genre bin they usually belong in. Only the music matters. You can even bookmark a song for later, or follow a link to iTunes or Amazon to buy the track.
This is us. Down at the Mardi Gras.
This is us in your daddy's car.
You can ask Pandora why it's played a particular song, even see album details of the artist playing. One thing you can't do, though, is play a bookmarked track in its entirety, but it will play a refresher for you. Now, here's something you can't do on FM radio. Hit the next button. That's right, if you don't like the particular song, tell Pandora, and unlike any other FM station, you'll never hear that song on your station again. And what's more, Pandora apologises to you.
Pandora's collection is a little over 500,000 songs, and it stretches across a huge range of genres. Pretty much anything that you'd see in sort of a typical Western pop music catalogue. We obviously have a lot missing because we haven't stretched across the globe yet, but you know, jazz, funk, pop, reggae, blues, folk, you know, and Latin music as well. We have music from all of those genres. It includes also music from large labels as well as homemade CDs. So it's not uncommon for us to actually get CDs sent to us that were burned on someone's home computer and the track titles written in Sharpie on the blank CD. So it's a huge range of stuff, and we look at all that music equally.
Now, what does a service like this cost, I hear you ask? Well, assuming you have a broadband internet connection, nothing to very little. Pandora is available in two forms, and both versions have exactly the same features. The first form is an advertising-supported version, which is entirely free. Over time, they'll be incorporating ads into this version of Pandora, but there are none currently. And for those who want to steer clear of advertising, subscriptions are available in two different flavours. For 12 months of unlimited use, it'll set you back $36. Or for 3 months of unlimited use, just $12. At the moment, Pandora is only licensed to offer music services to residents of the United States. But funnily enough, it does work here in Australia. Quality is equivalent to FM radio, with the music streamed in stereo, and the music you've heard just now was recorded from Pandora. A word of warning though, music of this quality uses bandwidth, so it pays to keep an eye on how much you've used towards your monthly limit. Still sounds too good to be true? Don't take my word for it. Log on to Pandora now and try it for yourself. This is a good example of how music and the internet can live together in harmony in a digital world. And as for the future,
in terms of the impact I hope that we have, you know, I would like to be the catalyst for helping create a musician's middle class so that we are large enough, we have a large enough listener base that we're exposing a huge collection of musicians to a large enough audience that they can start making a living at their craft. From the standpoint of the service itself, there are lots of ways in which we want to enhance it. Probably on the top of that list would be mobility. So creating a way for folks to listen to Pandora when they're not sitting in front of a computer, whether it's on a phone or some kind of connected device or other means. And probably the third would be to expand the sort of listener-to-listener experience on Pandora. So allowing people to more easily connect with other folks that are using Pandora to share things that they've discovered and to look at other people's stations and and allow the sort of community to have sort of a more active dialogue within the service.
Tim Westergren, founder of Pandora.com. Imagine a world where mobile broadband becomes affordable and we can have this sort of technology in the car or in our ears as we pound the pavement or walk the dog. I'm Andrew McComb for Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
So there you have it. What do you reckon, Pandora? You've become a convert? Dr. Ron?
I was very impressed with how easy it is to use and also the fact that you can vote if you like. You say, no, I don't like this song that you fed me, even though it's similar to the one I was just listening to. And as you said in your report there, Andrew, it apologises and said, sorry, you won't hear that one again. Here's another one. And it throws another song at you.
And there's no audio, there's no audible sort of commercials or no DJs talking to you in the midst of it. It's just like listening to a CD. Track fades out, track fades, new track fades up.
Yeah, and the quality was excellent. As you said, the bandwidth is, you have to consider that it's going to use bandwidth, I suppose. If you have an office of a dozen people, over the space of a week or a few weeks, you may notice a little blip in your bandwidth meter.
I did. I can tell you we have a 40 gig limit in at the office with the new ADSL2. And watching everyone in the office now runs up Pandora is the first thing they do when they get in the morning.
When they start their email.
I have noticed the bandwidth consumption go up somewhat at the office.
And is it... Is it usable over a low-level broadband connection? You said you've got ADSL2, but if someone's only got 512 or 256 broadband,
at home
will it work over that?
At home I've got ADSL1, and she's pretty good there. I think it buffers quite a bit, not that they give too much away in the technology. Dr. Owen, what do you listen on?
I am listening on a 1.5 down link. Yeah,
I've never known it to break up on anything that I've heard. We should crank out one of the Next G devices here and see if it works all right on that, or even one of the non-Next G devices and see if it works on a slow thing like that. Because that's its future.
Yeah. I'm curious to find out, though, how it'll deal with things like my musical taste from one day to the next might change quite a bit.
And you have a different channel. And different stations, like a preset. Like you can dial in 101.1 and then the next preset's 101.3.
I'm in an easy listening mood today, so I'll use my easy listening channel. Yeah. Okay.
You have multiple channels which you can then program. And Pandora might throw a dodgy track, or what you perceive to be a dodgy track. As I said in the report, it's a very personal thing, music. And if it throws you a dodgy one, you just hit, nah, yuck, don't like this. You get the apology and you won't hear it again.
I think I'll have a play with this. This sounds good.
It is. It's a great way to listen to music, whether you're at the office. If you're sick of hearing other things like streaming things from other radio stations or not, it's a really good way.
The other good thing is you don't need to install any software. It's all just streamed through your web browser.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to log on too. You just create they ask you for an email address. They ask you for your name and postal address and things like that as well. Just put in American postcode like 99999 or 90210, one of those television programs. And you're away. Tim would hate me to saying that. And by the way, if you visit the Tech Talk Radio website, you can hear that report again. Just follow the current show's link and... I did chat to Tim for about 20 minutes on air. And
so you get the full interview on the website.
You can hear the full interview with me chatting there. And it was a bit of a dodgy phone line to the United States, but that's just the luck of the draw these days. But you can actually hear the full 20 minutes of Tim and I prattling on there for a bit. You can have a listen and hear all the goss. Because I can only use about 4 or 5 minutes on air. So thank you very much, Tim, if you're listening to us, for your time the other day too. It was very good. So converts, guys?
I just want to know, wasn't there some issue with it only being used in the States?
They're only licensed to have the music in the States, so record companies here aren't getting their cut in Australia or other areas.
Although being the internet, it's very hard to stop it.
That's right, and I did mention that to Tim, and I think he said something along the lines that they have a team of people hunting down options for other countries. By the way, you're probably thinking too that the music is analysed by computers. Am I right here?
Yeah, you're not thinking, of course.
How else? It's not. It's done by humans.
Right, so when you say, no, I don't like it,
what happens is a human has listened to all that music track, or several humans.
The first time round.
He actually has a staff of 100, would you believe, of people listening to all the music tracks and sort of categorising. They're all musos.
How extraordinary.
And it's not what you think. It's not like it's been ripped and stuck into a machine and it said, oh, you've got a 4-4 beat or a 3-4 beat and whatever it is like that. But I've found it to be pretty darn accurate in the type of genre it's... the music style that it feeds back to you. And as Tim said in the interview, it's all done by humans.
I've got one more question. Dr. Ron, does it play on your Ubuntu workstation?
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm using Firefox as my web browser on Ubuntu, and it works faultlessly.
Fantastic. So you don't need to be a Windows or a Mac user to get value out of it.
Absolutely.
It's great.
On air at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. feel free to send us an email there now. Even go and have a play with Pandora and tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can ring our feedback line, and we'd love to hear this because we can use these on promos too. 1-300-664-882. Local call from anywhere in Australia. Dr. Ron will have the other number because I don't have it on my sheet here. Do you remember? No.
Plus 6139. No. That one? Do you want that one?
Oh, if you can remember it. Yeah. No, okay, off you go.
Yeah, 90125362. That's if you're outside of the country.
Or on a mobile.
Or on a mobile.
Yeah. That's good.
So the whole number is your international code and then
613.
Yep.
90125362.
Well done, that man.
Fantastic.
All right, back with Lydia Davis from Palo Alto after the break. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car. Crazy.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, there you go. We've had a lovely evening so far. We've discussed Pandora. Now we're going to go to the United States and have a chat to Lydia Davis, who is a Tech Talk Radio correspondent who lives in Palo Alto. She'll tell you that in a sec. Any of you guys been to that part of the world and had a bit of a tramps up and down Silicon Valley? No? Sorry, I'll push that one.
No,
sorry, Dr. Ron. How's that?
That's better. Yes, no, I haven't been to Palo Alto. It'd be nice to go there one day, though.
Yeah.
It's sort of the technology hub of the world, isn't it? It's where everything's developed and evolved from.
It's sort of, yeah, everyone's there. Google's just around the corner and all the eBay people. Hey, speaking of eBay, just briefly this evening, I know I shouldn't dwell too much about it. They're thinking of selling water on eBay because here in Victoria, where we originate from, 3WBC, we don't have much water here at the moment. They're thinking of selling water on eBay, auctioning it off, get your free tanker, come around, fill up the swimming pool. Can you believe that?
That's odd.
It is odd.
Getting desperate, isn't it?
It is odd, but that's what it's come to. Poor old Queensland. The 4KZ listeners and the Cairns listeners are probably out there in their
gumboots. They've got a bit too much water up there at the minute, haven't they?
Oh, it's just unbelievable what this exceptionally large, big country of ours does. But, yeah, water on eBay. I think, well, what's the world going to come to? But nonetheless, speaking of travelling the world, we're no expense spared here on Tech Talk Radio. We're heading off to the other side of the planet. We're going to catch up with Lydia, and she's going to tell us all about Google things and what's going on over there. Well, it's time to welcome Lydia Davis to the Tech Talk Radio studios. And Lydia is based in California. Whereabouts in California are you, Lyd?
Palo Alto. I am in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Okay, now you've just got things like Google just down the road from you and all sorts of things. Near San Francisco, aren't you?
We're about half an hour out of San Francisco. Google's the next suburb up in Mountain View. Yahoo, yeah, all of them are here, which is really quite cool, so I can get to see what they do and get the goss immediately, which I really like. There's a lot of goss here.
So speaking of gossip and things like that, I think there's been plenty of it because we haven't been on air over the Christmas break. So let's start off this week with, I guess, the news about link baiting and things like that. What's going on with link baiting? What is link baiting?
Link baiting has been around forever, really. It's just an unfortunate name, don't you think? Link baiting.
Well, it doesn't really describe what it is. Well, it does, but it doesn't.
It's just unfortunate. There's a lot of money being shoved into search engine optimization at the moment, and people are making packets out of doing it, if they do it well. Link baiting is basically a way to get people to come to your site and to link to you, because this is what the search engines love. Now, if they love it, it means that suddenly you're going to rank really well. There's a guy here that writes a blog. His name's Eric Ward, and he's brilliant. And he summed it up really clearly by saying, link baiting is really simple. We used to call it content, and that's what it is. It's just basically making sure that you've always got fresh content, because that's what the search engines want.
And changing content too, isn't it?
Well, it's putting in not so much changing. This is where blogging is becoming such a really big deal, especially in this country. I don't know. I was trying to work out the numbers in Australia, but I was having such a hard time. In America, you know, blogging is huge, and the search engines love it. I actually spoke to a guy called Adam Blasnick. He's the search evangelist, I think his title is, at Google. And he was saying, you know, we love bloggers because really what they blogs do is they update material, you know, often daily, sometimes a couple of times a day. This is what they want. They want links, they want good links, and they want lots and lots of turnover. So with websites, they don't change that often. I suppose websites don't change content that often. There's no need to do that. They put up their information and, you know, I'm actually reviewing a website in Australia at the moment and writing a story on that because they have no links. They don't do anything. They never update the content. And, of course, they're saying, well, why are we not seen in Google or Yahoo or Live? And it's, you know, well, you don't exist to them.
And I guess the reason why blogs are good is because, theoretically, it's hot off the press content, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, and tell us about the Fortune 500s all blogging too. Is that fairly important for their organisations?
Look at Google. They've got, you know, possibly, what, 100 blogs at the moment, you know. Microsoft, all the bigger tech companies are doing it because they know it works. I mean, they're optimising their own stuff. So it's really quite interesting. But, like the Fortune 500s, you look at them, there was a survey last year sometime, and they were saying that, you know, only 8% of Americans read blogs. And that was based on a survey of 20,000 people. But here I am saying, yes, you have to blog. And, you know, the reason I'm saying that, even though only 8% of people read blogs regularly, search engines love blogs. And, you know, if you're a company, you have to rate really well, especially in organic search. You don't want to be paying all the time, you know, to be, you know, paid inclusion with, like, Yahoo and Google and all the rest of it. So you want to be able to get there organically. And that's the only way you really can, is by doing all this updating.
Do you think companies are putting people on to actually sit down and write the company blog? Is this where we're going to
go? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm doing it. I'm actually doing it for someone here. What's happening is the Fortune 500 companies at the beginning of last year, there's only like 5% of them that were blogging. A new survey began, this is quite interesting actually, in October 2006. They've only looked at 64 companies out of the Fortune 500. They're still trying to get through a lot of them. And they need help because it's a wiki project. But out of the 64 they've looked at, 43 have corporate blogs, at least public-facing blogs, and several of them have many, not just one. So it's an important thing for corporations to, you know, to be saying, hey, this is what we do, this is who we are, and this is the information we can supply, so you don't have to go anywhere else. So, for instance, I suppose, you know, you look at Tech Talk Radio, and you think, you know, you could have a blog going which talks about the different things that you talk about on the show for a start. So the information is always updated, but, you know, you have information about different radio stations in Australia or worldwide that talk about technology. And, you know, doing that sort of thing will get you ranking, you know, almost, you know, immediately because you suddenly become this expert or supposed expert because you're putting all the information. It doesn't have to be everything you've written yourself. It can be, you know, you can link off to, you know, the government organisations that monitor all this stuff and say, okay, these are the latest laws and regulations. So, you know, it takes a little bit of time and it certainly takes a lot of effort, let me tell you.
All right, back to websites. The Tech Talk Radio website's been doing reasonably well. It comes up in searches, it's the number one search in, well, when you search for Tech Talk Radio or most of the guests or the people on the show, it comes up quite highly in Australia. But you've been having a bit of a look at the site and it's not all roses in paradise, is it? What have you found?
I was using a couple of really cool, what I think are really cool tools. Now, you would have heard of the Whois tool, domaintools.com.
Yep. Use it all the time, actually.
Okay, so you've seen the SEO text browser?
I have, yes, and it gives page. It gives a how good it is in the what the search engine optimization's like for it is. It gives a rank, doesn't it?
It does, and your ranking is 52%. That needs to be fixed, my friend.
Ah, yeah, well.
But that's a really cool thing that they've done, and they've got a whole lot of tools at their site that, you know, people can have a look at. You can have a look at what other people are doing. You can look at what other companies are doing. You look at what your competitors are doing, and suddenly you have information because you may be optimising your site on all these words, for instance, saying, hey, I want to get there in terms of search, and you look at your competitor and you can see there what their results are.
And there's a whole heap of really good tools out there for webmasters to use, including tools that I find where you can actually look at your site from another side of the world using proxies that they've got set up in other countries. And that's normally a really good tool and things like that. So,
absolutely.
Any other tools? Google's got plenty of tools on their website, haven't they?
Tons. Google Analytics has just grown. It's gone silly. But I'll tell you another one. Websiteoptimization.com.
Okay, haven't been there.
You haven't?
No.
It tells you how to improve page load time. So maybe not so much for you because you load fairly quickly. Well, for me, some companies or some businesses, some individuals may have sites that take a particularly long time to load and they're going, well, why is that? This place will tell you why it is and then it will tell you how to fix it.
Oh, that's good. What was the website for them again?
Websiteoptimization.com.
Okay.
It's a tool, so it's a cool tool.
Any other doozies you've come across?
Yeah, my final one, Site Advisor, which is McAfee's, they will basically tell you if you've been reported as spam by anyone.
Now, back to Google, because we can. What's a Google bomb, and what are people doing bombing Google?
Google bombing is a way, it's also called a link bomb. It's a technique where someone, I suppose, uses a specific term to link to another page. So, for instance, I can't remember what it is. I think it's like useless or talentless hack or something. And, basically what happens is you type that into a search engine and the first result that comes back is George Bush. I can't remember the actual name. It's a really dumb thing. This is what they do. And I just thought it was quite cool because basically some guy on some website, on some blog somewhere said, hey, let's try this, and it worked. So what Google have done in the last couple of weeks, they've said, hey, we've changed the algorithm so that doesn't work anymore, but, people are clever.
Yeah.
They'll continue to do it.
Now, the other thing with Google too, we had a bit of a flyover in Sydney on Australia Day. There are a lot of people laying naked on roofs of houses and people are now scrawling the net trying to find all these things that people have done. What do you know about it from your end of the world?
Well, it was a big deal. And
because they had a plane that flew over Sydney at 600 feet, wasn't it? Something very low level taking photos for Google Earth.
It was 600 feet. They got permission to do that. And they did it for several hours. I seem to remember it was like 10 o'clock.
Is it online yet? I haven't looked.
I haven't looked either. I knew about it before and I wrote a press release for it, but that was it.
Our favourite part of the day. What rumours are there coming out of Silicon Valley, the heart of where it all happens in the United States?
Now, this is the coolest rumour I've heard for a while, okay? So there's a guy here called Michael Eisenberg. He's a partner at Benchmark Capital, which is a venture capitalist company here. They are the people that invested in Second Life.
Oh, the virtual reality online game thing.
Yes, yes. And he's recently posted, I think it was like the end of January, posted a little thing saying, hey, I've been talking to some PhD friends of mine, and they've told me about this rumour that Google is working on turning Google Earth into a virtual world. Allah.
What?
Yeah. So this is the rumour he's putting out. Now, I'm sort of looking at it and thinking, okay, how true is this and all that sort of stuff? But you'd think the guy would have an idea.
Does that mean I can go on a virtual holiday and virtually come over and see you and talk to the virtual you all in my living room on my PC? That'd be great, wouldn't it?
How cool would that be? Now, listen, well, obviously Google Earth is terrific, but Google don't want you to zoom through it. They want you to add to it. So they've started doing stuff. And one of the cool things that's pointed out is if you have a look at Google Earth's website, it actually says they have the words, one more step to creating a lifelike 3D model of the whole planet.
Mm.
Now listen, do you know of SketchUp?
No.
Okay. In April 2006, Google released, or they bought this product, which is a 3D modeling program. They call it SketchUp, and they went on to encourage developers to use it and to build 3D layers on top of Google Earth.
So what, people can put a building or a town or something on top of it?
Absolutely. They even provide the 3D warehouse, which is online and up and running. It's a place, it's a website where you can demonstrate what you've done in SketchUp.
Okay.
So my question is the warehouse the door to the metaverse?
A conspiracy theory here.
Well, you never know. And I mean, if it pans out, it'll be pretty cool. But lots of people are saying, there's no way, they'll never do it because you can't zoom in, you can't do that. But, anyone that's played with SketchUp can see that, you can do it, you can zoom virtually.
Now, speaking of maps, speaking of maps, have you had a look at Microsoft's live mapping thing or maps.live?
Now,
I must admit, I was looking at your place in Palo Alto the other day, and I can look at it from four angles. It's really good. The purpose of my comment was just to draw attention to it because that seems to be, from a just an appearance point of view, it's nice having a 45-degree angle
from all angles of a location, as opposed to what Google does, which just lets you look straight down, and then when you do your 3D simulation, it sort of turns it all on its side and puts you know, artificial buildings on it. But I just thought that from a user-friendly point of view, the Microsoft Live Maps
have got,
I think they're head and shoulder above the Google Earth Maps.
Oh, they are. I mean, I think, you know, Google would have been sweating it when that was released, because it just immediately, everyone just went, wow, that was like a huge wow moment for everyone. It looked spectacular. But I look at Google and I think, okay, they're not going to let Microsoft get away with that. They're going to try to do better and bigger. So, the whole rumour metaverse stuff, you sort of start thinking it could be possible, because they don't like other people being better than them. And Microsoft, in that respect, certainly is.
Just last of all, before we say goodbye for today, there's a big tech show on in San Francisco at the moment. You're going to go down there, and Bill Gates is going to be there, and a few other of your friends.
He's a keynote. I'm just very excited, because it's quite a large conference. It's called the RSA Conference.
What does that mean? What's a RSA Conference?
It's an annual event, and they talk really mostly about security issues.
Now, Colin Powell's going to be there. What's he got to do with technology?
I have no idea, but he's talking about leadership. So I'd like to see him. I mean, certainly I'm going to go see Billy. I can't miss that. But the problem with that is I don't know if I'll actually understand a word he says. I'll be too busy.
Yeah, so it's on today in San Francisco. Starts today, does it?
It does start today. And
all right, well, we can talk about that very shortly. So thank you very much for today.
You're
it's been
welcome.
Wonderful. A great insight in what's going on in the middle of where it all happens. Bye. It's been lovely.
Goodbye.
Have a great day, and I'll talk to you next week. It was Lydia Davis in the heart of Palo Alto. Sorry, we got a little bit personal there, didn't we? We sort of waffled a bit, but nonetheless, I think we all got the gist of where Google may be heading. Virtual Google Maps. Is that going to work for them, guys? What do you reckon?
I don't like the sound of that.
No? Why
no.
not?
Are you a Second Life fan?
I've dabbled in Second Life, and there's some big gossip which we'll talk about next week on the show about Second Life.
Okay. Well, Second Life is the online gaming world.
Virtual world.
Virtual world.
And it's got Linden dollars. You can get in there and you can buy a bit of real estate and you can sell your wares.
In the shape of an ABC logo if you want, if you've got that much taxpayers' money to be wasting.
But
yes.
And the big pond people have got in there too, quietly.
Yes, they have.
There's virtual pond.
Is there a pond in the shape of a T?
I haven't looked.
No.
I
there's something really like
it's
that.
It's more
isn't
of a
there?
Quagmire.
But this, for people that aren't familiar with it, if you go back a few shows off the website last week, you can hear us talking about virtual reality and virtual games. Yes, we'll talk a little bit more about it next week, so don't fret if you haven't heard it, but yeah, lots of movement there. But yeah, back to Google Maps.
Google Earth. And
virtual world.
Google Maps. I don't mind the idea of people playing a game.
Don't you think it's going to take the credibility out of it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump into it.
I presume
you'd be able to go in and out of the add-ons, so you could be able, you would be able to see the world without the add-ons.
That's what you'd have to
and
do,
and people could
Graham.
Add on to it. I know in my copy of Google Earth, there's a wire model of Starship Enterprise floating over where Starfleet headquarters will be in San Francisco in the future.
You've got too much spare time.
I think so.
I didn't build it. Someone send
model.
It to me.
Oh, yeah, right. Sure.
But
I think you're right, Graham. If they keep it independent, if they keep Google Earth as a resource which you can use as we can now, and then if people want to have some sort of overlay or infrastructure where they're playing a game in that environment, then they can, and that's okay. I don't want to see them merge, though, so that you've only got Google Earth available as a game.
Interesting. Optus last week announced $800 million is going to be put aside for 3G, or their version of Next G, or thereabouts. People living outside the mainland capitals, apparently, are going to benefit from it. Mark represents one of the telephone companies and knows a bit about this sort of stuff. What's the lowdown here? Because all the press lately, Mark, is Telstra laughs at Optus going bush, apparently.
That's right. Yes, Optus have announced their $800 million 3G network to be completed by 2010. Now, you've got to wonder what's going on here. I think the players in the market have, changing the things with Next G. And Optus saying, at the moment we share a 2100 megahertz network with Vodafone, only in the capital cities. How are we going to compete where Telstra's got their next gen network everywhere?
Well, let's go back and recap for some people who may not be familiar with what 850 megahertz means. Mm-hmm. It's the old CDMA band, isn't
yep,
it?
Yep, so, and before that it was the Analog Spectrum or Amps.
Okay, and then all the new whiz-bang 3G stuff came along and it went way, way much higher in frequency.
Went up to 2100 megahertz.
Yeah.
But the very high frequencies didn't penetrate into buildings well and didn't...
And didn't go the long haul through mountaintops and over hill and over dar where the CDMA works so well. So hence, Telstra has an advantage because of good planning, if nothing else, with the 850 meg Next G.
Well, to replace their CDMA network, when they said they were shutting it down, they needed to go the same frequency to get the same coverage. If they tried 2100 megahertz, they would have needed, you know, three times as many base stations just to get the same sort of depth of coverage. So I think that's where...
in the bush.
Yeah, in the bush in particular. Yeah. Well, it had to cover CDMA. It was always promoted as a country network,
yep,
you know, even
yep.
though it worked in the city. But now they're saying the Next G network, we're going to get the same coverage as CDMA, but we're also going to have the depth of coverage that you get from the GSM in the city. So they want the best of both worlds. They spent the money on putting it at every site.
And I've used Telstra's Next G network, which is on the 850, and it does work in lifts in the city, and it does work in car parks, you know, below buildings.
Yep.
And in places where the 3G 2100 might be a bit dodgy.
Exactly.
And so, in places where even the GSM tends to get somewhat flaky.
But even for rural people on the land.
Yeah.
850's got to have a hell of a lot more of a shot of getting around a corner and over a hill.
Well, you'd think
than
so,
what the 2100 or 1800 megahertz services
so
can
what,
do.
So what, big question is, with this new Optus network, what frequencies are they using?
Well... they won't say. That what they're saying is they're going to make a combination of 2100 megahertz network and 900. Now, the issues come in here that they want to use 2100 megahertz because that's where they've got their spectrum. That's where they've got free spectrum to run out the network.
But and they've already got infrastructure too in the cities.
Yep, yep. But the issue is that they won't get the coverage they require by using it everywhere. So they want to start looking at 900 megahertz. Now, we rumoured to this last year on a show saying that they were doing some trials. Now they've announced it. They're not saying how much they're going to use at 900 megahertz, but let me just put it in perspective for you. One Next G, one wideband CDMA channel takes up about 5 megahertz of spectrum. Optus only own 8.3 megahertz of spectrum for their GSM network. So they can only do this in the country anyway, where they'd only need a few channels to cover rural customers.
I was about to say, that's not a lot of voice
that
channels.
Doesn't leave a lot of channels
customers
left
are
for
be...
GSM customers, does
yeah.
it, in those areas sort of thing. So you can't roll it out in the city because they can't just take away that much spectrum of GSM without ruining the network for, you know, be just into capacity, run out of capacity straight away sort of thing. So they'll have to roll out their 900 in the country areas. So they're not saying how much they're doing of what, but they're saying that they want to cover quite a huge amount, 96% of the population, which then Telstra have a rebuttal to that, which then says, well, that's still 1 million square kilometres short of the Next G network, which
yeah,
is...
The 1 million least populated
yeah, that's
areas
right. the
of,
last
the, of the country.
2
yeah.
or 3% that Telstra cover is also where, a huge amount of
where
area.
Andrew goes on holiday, yeah.
Oh, don't mention the war.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we can go into that next time now. Yeah. Andrew didn't have coverage, but he didn't try Next G as well, so we don't know what's going on there.
No. I was at a lovely little place called Borley Point, which is New South Wales south coast between Ulladulla and Batemans Bay. Now, the Telstra...
It's a lovely part of the world.
It is a lovely part of the world. It was actually very humorous, and I won't dwell on it too long, but mobile phone coverage in that part of the world is... few and far between. It was like war chalking. You walk through the caravan park and there'd be a circle on the ground with a T for Telstra and a circle for an Optus, and people would stand in strange spots.
It wasn't humorous trying to conduct a telephone conversation with you in the over the space of the
waiting
weeks
for low tide to get down to the rocks.
Oh, exactly. I said, if I turn my head 90 degrees, I'll drop the call, and sure enough,
yeah.
I did.
We'd be talking and you'd say, oh, hang on, there's a bird flying overhead. Beep, beep, beep.
And you're going to this area knowing that it was sort of out back a bit and you didn't carry
outback?
A CDMA
three
phone.
South of Sydney.
Yeah. True, out back, yeah. Yeah, and you didn't take a CDMA or a Next G phone with you?
No, I took a three phone, yeah. Mm. Yeah, which rhymes with Telstra, so I figured it might have half a chance. But
it
obviously not.
Telstra
so
when GSM, it's GSM, doesn't it? Yeah.
The three phones, when they're out of the metro areas, they're roaming onto the GSM network.
Yep.
Which
yep.
is still not built for country use either.
Yeah. Oh, well, so. Anyway, but it was very humorous because you'd all be walking down on the beach and you'd go up to the rock pools and all of a sudden a waft of Telstra would go across and everyone's phones would go beep, beep, beep in their pockets.
A waft of Telstra.
A waft of Telstra. And it was remind me of a scene out of Chicken Little where everyone stops and picks their phones up and makes calls because they've got coverage for all of about 3 seconds. And you could get great photographs of you know, for promotional material of all these people standing
shorts
on rocks
and
making
a t-shirt
phone calls.
And thongs, and suddenly their mobile phone goes off in their pocket.
Yeah, and the tide's coming in and they're going, I've got to wrap this call up.
So just wrapping that up, we're talking about 2100 megahertz spectrum. They also own 2100 megahertz spectrum shared 3G network with Vodafone. So right. They're going to be competing with themselves at the same frequencies, which seems very weird, but I think they've got no choice but to compete head-on.
But this is not unusual these days. There's a lot of multi-band phones around, and to have a phone that does the 2100 and the 900 and perhaps another band as well.
Absolutely.
Is not a big deal these days.
But they're going to be competing with themselves. They're going to own 2100 megahertz spectrum for Optus, and then they're going to be sharing a 2100 megahertz spectrum with Vodafone as well.
Can I ask another question? CDMA is being phased out. Seoul announced recently that it was going to be finished the rollout by January 2008. Is that sort
the
of
rollout of
the
next-gen,
sorry the close the close of CDMA to facilitate the fully functional next
shutdown.
G?
Yep.
Is that still the plan? Do you know of?
Yes, it's still a plan. Yep. Like, do you mean is it going to continue on beyond that?
Is it going to happen? Is CDMA as we know it going to be?
Absolutely.
See you later. Handsets no longer usable.
That's correct.
Or finish right around Australia by January this time next year.
And then they'll be coming after all the GSM users.
Yes,
and your GSM will be next. Will be up. You will be next.
Somewhere between 2010 and 2012. Now, do you want another rumor?
Just quickly.
Very quick one. Another rumor is that the Hutchison Network, who own the Three Network, the Hutchison Company, who own the Three Network, and also used to own the Orange Network.
Yep.
Now they shut down their Orange Network and gave all their customers U-Butte 3 phones. Yes. Okay, to get them, keep their customers, that sort of thing. Yeah. What are they doing with their 850 megahertz spectrum now? Well, the rumor is that they're going to roll out their own 850 megahertz wideband CDMA network in direct competition.
Ooh.
So watch this space. See if that rumor comes to fruition.
I love rumors like that. As you said in the opening segment tonight, Dr. Ryan, I like your rumors.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you want the latest Tech Talk Radio on your smartphone or PDA, visit the new Tech Talk Radio website, ttr.mobi. This is a lightweight website designed especially for small screen devices, so it loads quickly and provides easy navigation around our most popular links. You can find out what's on the current program, check show archives, and access links to the regular website. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Wi-Fi has been around for a long time, hasn't it? Every laptop you get these days, mobile sort of things now coming out with Wi-Fi in them.
All built in.
Tell us about Wi-Fi, Mark. In particular, the sharing of Wi-Fi around the world.
Imagine a world with free Wi-Fi, no matter where you went.
That's where we live now, isn't it?
Oh, well, not quite. I mean, those who are unsecured, yeah, that's the way it is.
My neighbour's still unsecured. It's another story.
Okay, imagine this concept, right? You join up with a company called Fon. You can go to their website, www.en.fon.com, and Fon is spelled F-O-N, and you subscribe with them for not your internet usage, but to be a member of their club. And what happens is, you share your Wi-Fi with everyone else who's a Fon member.
Right.
But wherever you go in the world, you can look up and see where other Fon members are and share their Wi-Fi. So you actually get
subsidized.
Does this mean
there's going to be open networks?
Like a coordinated directory of open networks.
Yeah, so it's sort of secure, but it's secure only to the, to Fon members, if that makes sense. So it doesn't let anyone get on, but allows you to go around the world and search websites and find areas where there's free Wi-Fi. Because you share yours with everyone else.
It's got a lot going for it. Whether it'll take off or not, it's nothing.
So n.fon.com.
Yep.
You've got a good gadget too for our gadget, and it's related to this.
That's right.
We'll talk about that very shortly when we do the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
All right, who's a gamer here? Who plays games on their computers?
Not for a long time, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, your parents, you don't have time. I'm the same boat. I couldn't. You and I, says he, pointing to Dr. Ron, it's up, was basically saying...
I thought
saying,
you put your hand up to no, say you're a gamer.
I thought you were
saying
push the finger up.
Put the button up. I can't talk.
We used to play Warcraft at stupid hours of the day and night when
thing,
we were
TikTok radio.
Young things. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Especially this button here.
That was probably pre-marriage and pre-kids.
Yeah, it was, actually. But a new study has come out in relation to the habits of Australian gamers. Now, I don't know whether this is going to... floor you or what? You probably go, oh yeah, yeah, that's right. But Interactive Australia 2007, which is a report that comes close to breaking down everything you needed to know about Australia's public's gaming habit,
right,
found that 79% of Australian households have a device for playing a computer game or video game. Now, that's not surprising, is it?
Does that count PCs, or are we talking about the PlayStation 3 and those sorts of things?
The whole shooting match.
Any of the above.
Of the above, yep. The average age of an Australian gamer is 28 years of age. Wow. Now we're all feeling young, aren't we?
Yeah. Average age, I would have thought it was a lot younger than that.
The interactive games are attracting new players all the time. 41% of gamers are now female, and 8% are now seniors. Does that surprise you? The girls are starting to become a force in gaming. I've seen that in a couple of television shows too.
Yeah.
But they're writing more games for females, aren't they?
Are they? I don't know.
Yeah, I think they are. So
I think some of the
untapped market. So
I think some of the very social games, you know, the massively multiplayer games, some can tend to appeal to the female mind as well.
Yep, Sims and things like that.
Yeah, parents and children are increasingly playing together, which I think is really good. We talked about that with Susan McLean from Victoria Police when she was in. Be sure to play with your kids. Really, really important tip. 61% of gamers play for up to an hour at a time. Playing computer.
Is that all?
Is that all? Yeah, no, exactly. Parents and game households say that the positive aspects of gameplay are more than just enjoyment and happiness. 73% say the games help their children learn about technology. 68% say games help their children learn maths. And 64% say that games help their children to learn to plan, which I think is pretty good. Because,
very good.
Yeah, and there's some pretty good games out there too, you know, not only just the chesses and things like that, but some good strategic games.
Yeah, we've always had the spelling ones and the maths ones on, and it's only started now that we've got into some more real games like Xbox and things like that.
There's some great online word games as well. All you need is a web browser and you can play things online, yeah.
And just finally, one of the other interesting statistics, which I'm going to throw to you boys because I want you to have a bit of a guess. What percentage of games classified by the Office of Film and Literature Classification in 2006 were rated G or PG? Now, there's an interesting game, but being parents and people who are concerned?
My guess would be about 30 to 40%, somewhere in that area.
I'd say it would be fairly low. I'd say most would be around about the M rating when I think of games like...
It's an interesting perception. That's why I asked this question, because you're all miles off.
Okay, I was thinking of lots of shoot 'em up games.
Yeah, no, I was too when I first read this, but 70% of the games classified last year by the Office of Film and Literature had a G or PG rating. Now, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
Not bad at all. All right, so there you go. There's a little bit of insight into the Australian gaming studies and things like that. We're going to come back for our final break, or after our final break, the gadget of the week, the website of the week, and the odd spot. And then we've finished the first show for 2007.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
All types of people listen to Tech Talk Radio.
And that means if you're on the move, in the car, in the train, or out of the office, you can't always get access to high-speed internet. That's why we've developed a new website custom-built for small devices. TTR.mobi is the new website for small-screen smartphones and PDAs. Get the latest Tech Talk Radio program information, access show archives, and find out what's on next week. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. For our new listeners, the gadget of the week. Something bizarre, something helpful, something useful, something completely useless. It's what we normally talk about now. And guess who's got one for us this evening? Mark.
Yes, I've brought in the Belkin Wi-Fi phone for Skype.
Oh, yes.
Something you can buy on eBay. I'm sure you can buy it at other spots as well, but this is where a work colleague of mine has got it.
Looks like a normal mobile phone,
It does, and it's got a normal Nokia battery in the back of it too that you charge. You charge it via USB. It's got all those nice features in it. But it's basically a phone that works on via Skype and must use a Wi-Fi connection that we were
Now, we tried this tonight in the backyard because my neighbour's got an unsecure Wi-Fi network, and sure enough, we just turned it on and bing, it said, yep, there you go, you got service, make a call.
Yeah. You could make calls through that Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, the unsecured Wi-Fi network just down the road from here.
Now, you'd need like a Skype out account, wouldn't you?
To ring a number,
To ring a number. But
so you could ring a Skype account, and of course that doesn't cost you, but you will need Skype credits if you want to make a phone call to a mobile or a landline phone.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
And you can also buy a Skype in number, so you can get an actual phone number for your Skype phone as well.
That's right, and he has this
Anyone
guy
use
who
that service?
It. Yes, yeah. The guy who's here from South Africa contracting, he's got this phone. He also has an Australian number, so that he has a local number.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it, and there's a link on our webpage if you go and visit the website. All the links are there so you can see exactly what we're talking about.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, we all heard about the Google flyover that happened last week. Excuse Graham. Yes, the website has been posted by Google, and it's one of those very long URLs. So I'm not going to repeat it here, but I'm just going to say for the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, go and see what this plane did when it flew over the top of Sydney. You'll also be able to see what some of the manufacturers and retailers did by dressing up their roofs and things like that on the flyover as well. So if you want to visit, you can actually go there if you like. I'm not going to read it out because it's one of those very long URLs at google.com, da-da-da-da. Visit the Tech Talk Radio website and click on tonight's show, which is in downloads. And at the very bottom of the screen there, you'll see a little link. It'll take you through there and it'll show you exactly what Google did. And you can have a fly around and a bit of a play. I must admit, I wasn't that impressed. I didn't think it was that flash, like compared to what you can see in the United States. But nonetheless, people were out there doing their thing, and Target, one of the major retailers, painted a big red Target on the roof of their shop and stuff like that. But that was in Sydney.
It's not quite the same resolution as that that's available in the US, is it?
No. I was sort of a bit disappointed. But nonetheless,
it's a start.
They get points for trying. So
worth a look.
That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
And Dr. Ron's been on holidays for some time now, so he's probably got a good collection of these. The Odd Spot. Doctor, do tell.
Yes. For those of you who are first-time listeners, The Odd Spot is our weekly end installment, which just provides something funny, something humorous and technology related.
Something embarrassing at
something
times
embarrassing
too.
For everybody. Now, off the back of what Andrew was talking about with the Google flyover, Sydney Air Traffic Control actually denied that chartered plane permission to fly over parts of the inner city, Andrew, owing
really?
To
air
traffic control reasons, which was perhaps fortunate for Google after a prank by two students from a school near Southampton in the south of England who used Weed Killer to etch an image of a 6-metre-long phallus in the grass as an end-of-term joke. Their handiwork now appears on Microsoft's Virtual Earth.
Oh, really?
a spokeswoman from the school told the Press Association news agency that, quote, Southampton City Council reseeded the area and the grass was regrown by the beginning of the new school term. Yes, the phallus is not visible on Google Maps as the photograph was taken at a different time.
Very good. There's always one, isn't there? Or several in this instance. So go and have a look for yourself at the Google Earth version of
Google
Sydney.
Google Earth or Microsoft's Virtual Earth. That's the one.
Yeah, have a bit of a laugh. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, the first one back. It's time to say till next week. But before we go, what's going on? You had something to say about TARDIS 3 and on the
On the forum recently. The forum's a great place to go if you want to find out something or you're not sure where to look for some information or some technology-related help. We had a user there, GD, who was after a cataloguing program to catalog his CDs.
Oh, yes.
And TARDIS 3 found a program that fit the bill absolutely perfectly, and GD couldn't be happier, and he sent us messages on to that end.
What's the address of the forum, Graham?
You can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Next week, we're talking all about Macs. Justin Dunlop's in. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists are Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.